Welcome to Project Cargo Weekly, and this is a special interview today with a special guest of honor, Mr. Ron Lentz, the managing partner of Logisyn Advisors in Chicago, USA. Very happy to have you. Welcome, Ron.
Well, Bo, thank you. I'm very, very pleased to be here. I love all the different aspects of logistics and forwarding, and Project Cargo has got a special place for me also.
Good to hear. As with most of my interviewees, or I should say all of my interviewees that I've done over the last few months, I always give them a chance to first explain who are they and how did they end up in the position they're in. So without further ado, Ron, how come you are where you are, please?
It's a good question, Bo. I don't know that anybody ever sets out to be in logistics unless it's a family business, but I started off in finance and then went to work in the mid 70s, if you can imagine that, for what was Ryder Truck Rental at the time. Ended up being there for 22 years, helping to build their third party logistics business was my final stint there. So I spent 11 years of my time with them, helping to run and build the full service lease business. And in the last 11 years, taking a small $80 million division and building it to a $5 billion division, which was ended up being their 3PL business. And I left there in 1999 to start up my first company, which was on the backbone of some of the technology that was claimed to be some of the best technology in the marketplace, with companies like i2 and Manugistics and transportation management software and global procurement software. Mm-hmm. So we built a what was called a BPO company, which is business process outsourcing. So we built a process company that could actually, on the backbone of the failures of those technology companies, get the technology to work. Mm-hmm. Over 2 years, we built it to a pretty large entity, sold that to private equity. And that was in the early 2000s was my advent into private equity. From there, I went to work as one of the, I guess, fix it guys of at the time it was Left Profit American, which turned into Geologistics, which turned into Agility, which was just recently sold. Did all different types of forwarding globally. I was responsible for sales globally, and I was also the COO of operations in all the Americas, both North and South America, really helping to build the agent base in South America. Did a lot of project work coming out of the Gulf War. So pretty familiar with, we used to call it, I shouldn't say this to a bunch of Project Cargo people, but we said if it was big and ugly and nobody else wanted to move it, call us, because that's what we like to do. After we sold that to a Kuwaiti company at the time, PwC, went on to a couple of more global entities, ran a company out of Cork, Ireland. That was a postponement company that had operations throughout EMEA and also through China and the US. We sold that company. So as you're getting a trend here, what I would do is I would help either grow and sell companies or fix and grow and sell companies. Right. So by 2010, I had done that five times, decided that, you know what, instead of hiring investment bankers, as I was always doing, and training them on logistics and understanding logistics and the idiosyncrasies of logistics and understanding and how to recognize revenue in different countries and treasury management in those countries and those type of things, wouldn't it be good to have an investment banker that actually understood the industry? Yeah. So started up a company with a couple of partners. Okay. In 2010 to build a the first of what we called of its kind, truly a middle market investment bank that focused in on industry segments, that was run by leaders that came out of the industry as ex-CEOs of those type of industries. Did that for 10 years and then spun off on my own with a couple of new partners that came out of the logistics business, one that was second in command and helped build back in the late 80s and all throughout the 90s and sold to UPS called Fritz Companies.
Oh, yeah. Right.
So, and he was a lawyer, still is a lawyer. He's one of my partners. And then my second partner is started up CargoWise, which many forwarders use as their base of IT infrastructure today. And he sold that to Richard White to creating what is called WiseTech today. Mm-hmm. So we got together and formed Logisyn with the sole purpose, Bo, of trying to traditional M&A services are offered by investment bankers who learn logistics. We like to believe ourselves as logisticians or logistics experts who do M&A work and advisory services. So it's a different spin. So when you walk into somebody who has, whether it's a third-party logistics company, a forwarding company, or a project cargo company, we understand their language. We understand what they do. We can have candid discussions with them, both on their current strategy, on whether they want to sell, whether they want to get ready to sell, or whether they have kind of hit a wall on organic growth and want to do some acquisitions. Mm-hmm. So we do both buy-side work, where we go into companies and help them grow with very specific focused buy-side intent, usually globally, though we focus a lot in North America. We do some global operations. And then on the sell side, we do the same thing, where we're going into a company and we represent them to take them to market, get them prepared to go to market, and help them understand, you know, what the value of their company is.
I must say, it's I've been listening, almost mesmerized here. Very interesting career you've had, and some of the big names you mentioned certainly rings a bell for me as an old freight forwarder in projects. So very impressed. I certainly can I can imagine that Logisyn certainly would have the know-how it takes to take care of any forwarder. One question that comes to mind with all your experience from around the world. Let's say I own a middle-sized freight forwarding company, and I'm getting a little bit old, which happens to be the truth too. what should I? What is the main thing where can you help a guy like me? Can you match me up with a? Because let's say I own this company, and of course, even though I'm interested in money, I'm also interested in my legacy to kind of continue. Can you guide me on finding the right partner to either merge with or be taken over by?
Oh, I've been doing this for a long, long, long time, and you're the first person that mentioned one of the two right words.
Okay.
Legacy. Well,
legacy.
legacy is important, and you think about it. You know, you birth a company, right? So you build it, whether it's 20 years, 30 years, 5 years, whatever it is. And in today's world, especially in North America, which is different than Europe, Europeans generally like to, their legacy is going from generation to generation, and passing it on. In North America, it's a build and sell environment.
So most
entrepreneurs aren't leaving their business to their children or family or those type of things. They're when they get to time where as we say in the States, hanging up their spurs, they're going to sell that business.
Right.
Now the question is, as you said, is, you know, what do they want out of their legacy? And the second most important word out of that is I call culture and cultural compatibility. So, you know, if you want that legacy to continue, then you've got to have the right cultural compatibility with the prospective either investor or buyer. And we divide buyers up into two groups.
Okay.
One group is strategics. The strategics are generally your competitors, somebody who does what you do, maybe not exactly, but let's just say that you're a project based forwarder, and you want to get into air freight because you think there's some synergies in there for your business that are very applicable because all the countries that you're in, because of the infrastructure that you've built. Well, it might make sense for you to go out and buy a specific, you know, air freight forwarder, Or if you're selling, maybe you want to sell to somebody who doesn't have Project Cargo type, you know, services that they can utilize you to do that type of stuff. So by doing that, now you've created not only a service demand in the marketplace, you're enhancing your picture and your value proposition in the marketplace with doing that. And, you know, your value just goes up. By doing those type of things. So that's what we're trying to do. We're trying to understand the business owner. Yeah. What do they want to do? Are they care about their legacy? There are people out there, quite honestly, this give me the most money for my company. And you know what? I'm going to walk away. I'm going to go sit on a beach. And that's what I want to do.
Yeah.
But for the most part, I will tell you that most of the owners that I deal with, they're interested in trying to figure out, you know, what is the right fit? I've built this company over the last 10, 20, 30 years. I have tremendous love and respect for my employees. It's my personal family. You think about it,
exactly.
You know, when you work for a company, you know, you probably spend more time with that company than you do with your family sometimes, especially if you're a project porter, where
definitely.
You can be gone 2, 3, 4 months at a time away from your family. You know, your project based business becomes, you know, that family. So you want to make sure that you ensure that livelihood for your employees, because there's only three things in logistics that ever matter. And it always has to go in this order. And it's amazing because I've fixed a lot of companies that have been in trouble. And when they don't follow the process, and it's a linear process, when they don't follow people, number one, process, number two, enabled by the right technology, and it's people, process, technology. So when they don't follow that process, it's a recipe for disaster. You know, when you think about selling your business or buying a company to fit into your business, the first thing you have to think about is there cultural compatibility? Is there a match with the people? Are we talking, you know, the same type of, you know, language between them, or are we talking one language and they're talking another language? It's never going to work.
Yeah.
And I don't want to pick on companies, but there was a company in 2007 that was purchased by one of the world's largest private equity firms. And they put a very large forwarder based in Houston together with a very large third party logistics company based in Florida, and with a kind of a package delivery company based out of the UK. They put them together, and those three entities became the new company, and they failed miserably. To this day, they failed miserably. And they've since been sold a couple of times at a completely lesser value than what they were worth in the first place. And it all was around culture.
Yeah.
They had three companies that were very strong companies with completely different direction, completely different leadership, and it never synergized together, and the cultures never mixed.
So basically what we can deduct from this is that, of course, everyone loves money, and I would be a fool to say that I also don't love money, but I would also like to see if I'm and I believe 80% of the people, at least that I know in this world, they want to see their legacy continue. They want to see that whatever they build up, like you said correctly, with a family, that they're still doing good, and you're proud of something to see that it's still growing. Whether you have a 10 million or 12 million in a bank, what does it really matter? You know,
exactly.
I guess that's what you're saying.
So
if a guy who wants to buy, let's say I want to buy a company, and of course, then you have to find the right fit. There's an old saying, as you certainly know, in the States, there's no free lunch. A company like yours, how do you, let's say, determine the size of your lunch for a merger or an acquisition or a selling? Are there fixed rules for this, or is this case by case, or is there any industry standard for that, or how does that work?
Great question. What I never liked, Bo, is when I was running companies and I would hire outside consultants to come in. You'd hire the big consulting firms, and you get sold by the partner. Okay. And then As soon as the deal was done, I called it, they back up the MBA school bus. So they'd have these kids, you know, that were fresh out of school. They never worked in a company ever in their lives.
Right.
And you're paying them $1,500, $2,000 US a day to learn on your nickel. And, you know, you're training them, you're teaching them and everything. Yeah. So they never had skin in the game. That was always my problem with hiring consulting companies, that they don't have skin in the game. So the model that I've been really working on and trying to create over the last 20 years has been a skin in the game model. So what we do is we take a small retainer up front, so that, and it's twofold. It's number one, to pay a little bit of our overhead. You're not going to, you know, make any money off of it, but pay a little bit of our overhead. And then then we get paid a nice success fee when we accomplish the it, whatever the it is. If the it is to buy a company, then we get paid off of that. If the it is to sell their company, then we get paid off that. And we don't have, we've got some guidelines, but that's what I wanted to do with my partners. I didn't want to have an established, you know, price list that says, well, this is what they want. Check, check, check. Okay, do this. We go by each individual company and try and understand it. What we won't do, though, is, as you are well aware, there's a ton of private equity firms in the United States. There's over 6,000 private equity firms in the United States.
Yeah.
Tremendous amount of capital out there. We measure that somewhere in the neighborhood of $1.4 to $1.6 trillion as we sit here today is available to invest in companies. And that is just with US-based private equity firms. So they got these kids dialing for dollars, okay? So they're hiring the kid out of business school. They give them a list and said, go find one of these companies that want to sell. So they get these phone calls. And trust me, there are people who are watching this right now that said, I get those three or four or five times a week. I can't believe somebody's calling me up. They don't know my business. They don't understand my business. And they want to buy my business. They don't want to buy your business. They're a kid who's been assigned, you know, a task to find out.
Yeah.
So what we try and do is not do that. I won't go work for a private equity firm that wants us to find what they call a portfolio company for them. It's just too difficult. It's too generic. It's not focused enough. I will work for private equity that has a portfolio company, meaning that they have a base of business and infrastructure there that they want to add on to. And we'll go look for specific add-ons to that business because that makes much more sense and it's much more focused. And anytime that we work on the buy side, and we have developed our own buy side team that just focuses in on buy side. And that's what their goal is to do. Figure out what our client wants to do. Where's their goal? Do they need additional services? Do they need additional geographies? Do they need some specific type people? Do they need a technology in there that they don't have available? So let's go look for that specifically on the buy side, and let's find those who are the best match for you, because that's the easiest one then to integrate into your business on the buy side.
Okay. So it's kind of, you cannot call it speed dating, but it's a kind of dating service in a way that you find the best match.
We really are a matchmaker. It's a great analogy. Yeah, we're a matchmaker. We really are. That's what you want to do.
And just to get clear, your head office is in the States, and you're based in Chicago as Logisyn. Tell us a little bit about how are you set up. Who are you in the company? What are your various responsibility areas?
So we are set up based out of Chicago. Okay, which is in the States is primarily the transportation logistics hub of the country. So it's a great place to be out of up. excuse me, up until 2 weeks ago, I lived in Chicago all of my life.
Okay.
And now I just moved down to Florida. You know, that's what they all say, you know, old timers come to die in Florida. Well, hopefully I didn't come to die in Florida. I just came down here because of the heat and the beauty it was about time. Kids are down here and it just made a lot of sense. But, so, we are pretty virtual. So we do have our headquarters and office in Chicago, but we don't have more than one or two people going to our headquarters every single day.
Okay.
So we have people located in, Connecticut, New Hampshire, New York, New Jersey, Chicago. Now I'm in Sarasota, Florida, San Francisco. I'm certain that I'm missing some places. Portland and Phoenix and Toronto, in Toronto, Canada.
All right.
But it's all virtual.
Right. And would you say, being very, let's say, U.S. Focused, but you also do have success stories from outside the good old U.S., don't you? I mean,
yes.
At least with your own personal background is certainly more international than most I know. But basically, if I was afraid for water in Singapore and I want to find a match in the U.S., you would know how to deal with that. It's not only U.S. focused, right?
So we are U.S. focused on one end of the spectrum. Okay. Right. So if it's Singapore and they want to come to the United States, that's a great fit for us. If they're U.S. and want to go to Singapore, that's a great fit for us.
Okay.
If they're Singapore and want to go to the U.K., we're probably going to have a little bit more difficult time with that.
Right. And would you have, let's just for argument's sake, say it's a Singapore company wants to come to the UK. Now UK is out of the EU. Maybe there are some new developments. Then you would have partners in countries where, let's say, you are not per se yourself. Right?
Exactly. We have partners throughout most of EMEA and now different parts of APAC. It just depends on where in the region that they are, but I would say most logistics hubs. You know, you mentioned Singapore, obviously, is a logistics hub. So there's certain areas that we have a much greater network in than other areas.
Understand. Ron, one question also that comes to mind: the companies you deal with, can it be It doesn't necessarily have to be big companies. It can also be small and medium size. It can be any size, can't it? I mean, there's no...
So we have decided that we don't want to work with the big companies.
Okay. that's a direct answer.
So I don't mind selling to them.
No.
I don't mind working with them on the buy side to help them, but I'm not going to sell them. Because they'll probably use a larger investment banker that is a name entity. But I like to deal with the owners of the business. And my partners like to deal with the owner of the business. Sometimes when you get into these bigger corporations, they have a hierarchy built into them that you got to deal with 4, 5, 6 people. You know, there's a Danish forwarder that I was dealing with that will remain unnamed. But I will tell you, I can't get deals done with them because they're just too difficult, simply because they have such a hierarchy. And once you get past that hierarchy, then they have an operating committee. They have an investment committee. You know what? Business owners today, they like to move quick and fast and be nimble. They like to make decisions. And that's the way we have centered our company. So we like to consider ourselves that we work with what we call SMEs, small middle market enterprises.
Yeah. Now that's, I certainly hear what you're saying. Once you get over to a certain size, politics seems to matter more than the real business.
Well, I love reading your, you know, you and me have something in common. We're very candid. So I love reading your blogs that you put out there because you're not shy on candor either. So that's good.
No, but you know, I live in a socialist country, so I have to watch my neighbor here if he's listening in. This is very interesting, Ron. How do you see the future? You mentioned this enormous amount of money out there available for you know, money, I suppose, is always trying to find a way to get more interest. And now you don't get nothing from having money in the bank. But this enormous amount of money out there, I know this has nothing to do, let's say, with merger and acquisition, but is there a crash coming our way? Is there going to be a correction sometime soon? Because there seems to be so much money out there that I've never heard about it before. Or am I mistaken?
I will tell you this. I am not an economist. I don't even do my own personal investing because I'd probably not be very good at it. You would think so, right? In the US, we're printing money like it's free. You know, China's been doing that for years and they get away with it. You would think that there's going to be some type of correction. I mean, the stock market in the U.S., both NASDAQ and the New York Stock Exchange have gone crazy, you know, over the last couple of years, even with COVID. It breaks a record every single day, which for me personally is a great thing. But you got to sit there and say, one of these days it's going to change. But there's so much money in the market available. And I mentioned, you know, on for the M&A side, as far as how much money private equity has, forget about the private equity side. The cash on balance sheets of strategics is incredible too. They have so much cash. They got to figure out ways to spend that cash too. You know, you look at a few years ago, UPS bought a company called Coyote. They paid $2 billion for Coyote, and it was insignificant to them because of the cash that they had out offshore that they could use on it, and the synergies that it brought into them. So it really didn't cost them $2 billion, even though that's what they paid for it. And Agility just being bought by DSV and Panalpina. They're trading at, I don't know what it is today, but a plus 40 multiple price to earnings. And they paid 21 times EBITDA for Agility. Okay. Wow. That sounds like a ridiculous number. But guess what? If they paid a dollar for it, they now made $2 on it because of their current price to earnings ratios. So, I mean, it's a huge, you know, monetary win for them right out of the box. Literally out of the box. Yeah. They've made money on that acquisition.
You have me convinced. I think I'm going to sell my blog to New York Times if they're interested. really, Ron, I must say, you taught me quite a few things here, and it's right. By coincidence, today I spoke to a real estate broker here in the area where I live, and I've never seen his smile that big. And then I speak to some people from the ship owning side. I saw Maersk's result for the first quarter was almost as big as their whole last year result. I mean, all trade lanes are full. Ship owners are happier than ever. Real estate brokers are happy. It seems to be, very little downside to this COVID, at least right now, even in logistics, right?
Well, you know, here's the interesting thing, Bo, that you and me can appreciate. People didn't even know how to, in the States at least, did not even know how to spell supply chain before last April. If you weren't in logistics or knew something about Amazon, you had no idea what a global supply chain meant.
No.
Now, all of a sudden, because of lack of PPE, lack of drugs moving back and forth, and forget about all that. You go to order a Bosch dishwasher in the United States, it's manufactured in Germany and the plant was shut down. And now you got a 6 to 9 month wait in the States because of their supply chain. Yeah. All of a sudden, you know, the entire US has been educated on the term supply chain. So they actually understand the integral nature of a supply chain being attached to, whether it's attached to China or Mexico or India or, you know, Europe. All of a sudden, these supply chains are fully integrated, and nobody even quite understood that before, but now it's become common knowledge.
I fully agree with you. And then on top of that, don't forget the grounding at the Suez Canal. I mean, here in Sweden now, they finally understood where the Samsung television is coming from. I mean, they thought they just picked it up in the store, which they, of course, did. but now it's not there anymore. So it's a little bit the same as you're saying.
Yeah, no, so, exactly right. Yeah.
Who knows if the guy upstairs, further up, I mean, maybe he had a background in forwarding. I mean, he might want to put our minds straight to remind people what we do.
Yeah, exactly. No, I agree.
Ron, I must say, I don't have much more questions to ask you, and I'm very impressed not only by your background, but also with the clarity and succinctness that you replied my questions, that some of them I shot from the hip, but I've always found that interviews that are more relaxed and natural are also more hopefully well-received by the viewers. So I want to say many, many thanks, Ron.
Well, thank you, Bo. I appreciate it. And hopefully you got a little bit of that we're not M&A guys that are doing logistics, or logistics guys that are doing M&A. So you kind of get that we do understand, you know, at least a little bit of the industry.
Certainly. Your background says it all. So I'm most impressed about it. Once again, thanks, Ron. And to all our listeners, viewers, readers from around the world, this was yet another exclusive interview by Project Cargo Weekly. And our special guest of honor today has been Mr. Ron Lentz, the managing partner of Logisyn Advisors in Chicago, a most competent, it would seem, a company to go to, whether you want to buy or sell or get advice. So stay tuned for more interviews in the near future. Thank you.